are listening to Conversations with Nathan Latka, where I sit down and interview the top SaaS founders, like Eric Yuan from Zoom. If you'd like to subscribe, go to getlatka.com. We've published thousands of these interviews, and if you want to sort through them quickly by revenue or churn, CAC, valuation, or other metrics, the easiest way to do that is to go to getlatka.com and use our filtering tool. It's like a big Excel sheet for all of these podcast interviews. Check it out right now at getlatka.com.
We got to 100 million in a little less than 7 years, and we hired a CEO, and it was the second best decision I've ever made. All right, my name's Jason. I started WP Engine 14 years ago. We have hundreds of millions in ARR. I'm gonna share with you some lessons that I learned along the way in doing that. You probably know me online though as the smart bear, so hence that. So we got to 1 million ARR in our first 18 months, which is pretty good. I thought maybe already the company could just grow like that. But then in 2012, our growth rate shot up again. We went from 1 million to 5 million in 1 year. And as you can see, it never ended. We got to 100 million in something like a little less than 7 years. And this little flat part at the beginning, that was that previous chart, right? Just to give you a sense of scale of what happens. And so I want to take 20 minutes and talk about stuff that I learned from this part, where the company is growing faster than people can grow. So the first thing is that you know it's going to be different, but it's dramatically more different, I think, than you expect if you have never done this before. Because before product market fit, you're exploring, you're trying to figure out, yeah, everyone here knows this, who's the customer and how do we get there and what's our unique thing and blah, blah, blah. So this is all experimentation and unknown stuff. So there's all these techniques you should use, like trying crap and pivoting fast and nonsense like that. But after you have product market fit, you know those things. And so the things that you do dramatically change. And so just saying things like, we'll keep experimenting, is not how you scale something that's already working. So for example, you're not just building stuff, you're hiring and managing humans. Quite different from finding a marketing channel or building software. You have something to lose, like there's growth, there's customers. So defending that becomes a whole thing to do that you didn't. You not only didn't do before, but you shouldn't have. There was nothing to do. You built a kind of a crappy product, because of course. So now it's time to fix it. Which you didn't do before, nor should you have, but now it's time. That's different again, different mindset. Before, if you had a bug that affected 1% of your customers, that might be 0 or 1 people, so whatever. But now you have a bug that affects 1% of the customers, you get 30 support tickets in a day, and now everyone's behind, and you get 30 negative tweets, and that's really bad. So that means the rare things, which are now common, you have to do something about, and it's hard to detect and deal with rare things, just in general. Totally different processes and mindset, right? Also, if you're, let's say, doubling in a year, what does that mean in terms of how many people you need, let's say, in support? And how long does it take you to find and interview and hire and get people up to speed in support, especially since you have no processes and documentation because you're new? So what does that mean? I don't know, it'll take like 6-9 months. Okay, so you need to know how many people you need in 6 or 9 months. That means your business has to be more predictable, another new thing that didn't exist before. So there's this stupid phrase, it's not stupid, it's a tired phrase. What got you here, you know, right? In this case, it really is apt. The stuff, the activity that got you here won't get you there because there's these other types of behavior which are now correct. And it's a lot of stuff. And I guess the point I really want to make is that this changes who you are and what you are even proud of. Because you were proud of that you experiment and da-da-da. You're like, that's why we're different, that's why we're better, and big companies are stupid and we're smart. And here you are having to change that. That is the difficult, not only from a skill set point of view, but from an emotional point of view, that is difficult. And I think we don't appreciate how hard that is enough. So that's the first thing, this fundamental difference. Okay, another obvious thing that happens with scale is now there's a bunch of people, and we all know that's gonna be hard. There's no way that's good. So, fun question. I have a lot of people, so we go faster? You already know. Well, okay, let's say I have 30 people, and some competitor has 3 people, so we should go 10 times faster. We have 10 times as many engineers. We may have 100 times as many customers. We can learn more about customers. That part's true, right? Now, we all know this is not true. We'll go faster, but not like that much faster. So there's no silver bullet to fix this, as you probably know, but there are things to do to be more effective in leveraging the scale, which now should be an advantage of yours, that you have extra people and time. Should be, but of course it gets pulled down, so what can we do to take more advantage of that? So observation is when you add people, you tend to add more stuff you can do. We just heard that in the last talk. At first, you're just making features and trying to sell it, of course. But then you start hiring people, and maybe you expand the market or do other fun things. More people, more stuff. Makes sense, maybe creative stuff like micro projects. You created a YouTube channel, hooray, YouTube is fun. Everyone goes up market to the enterprise, right? That's what we all do, because they have money, don't they? They do. Anyway, so this is what people do. And what I'm gonna argue is that this is not what you should do. That you should instead still have only a couple of things that you do and focus everybody, all the scale that you have, on just a few things instead of this. And the reason is that if you cut up everybody into all these different initiatives, then each initiative is not at scale, doesn't have that many people, doesn't have that many resources in terms of things like money, and so isn't very good. So you've taken what should have been this advantage of people and diluted it. So if you have a YouTube channel and you have two people working on it and some little startup is good at YouTube and also has two people on it, you're not better at them than at YouTube. So that's not so good. Whereas if you put 10 people on that and lots of investment, maybe you could dominate YouTube in your area. That actually sounds pretty good. So instead of splitting it up, you want to not dilute your scale across a bunch of projects, but still have just a few things. That way you're using your leverage to win. Now, of course, this begs the question, if I'm only gonna do a few things, what do I pick? How do I pick just a few things since I have so many options? Here's what I actually do with teams at WP Engine, and sometimes groups of teams at WP Engine. The first thing is we sit down, we do this once a quarter, and we say, okay, if we weren't encumbered by problems, challenges, constraints, how would we advance our strategy right now? So like, could be anything. Maybe there's a feature you know, we all know, would be great because customers talk about it, we've invented it, competitors don't have it, we know it's good, like it would be so strategic, it's how we're going to win, you guys. So maybe it's that, or you know, there could be, this is just some ideas, right? There could be all kinds of things. It's time to open a new sales channel. Whatever would be the best way for you to win now. This is obviously something where you can brainstorm lots of things and then come together on a few things, right? And it's good to get as many people in the room for that kind of brainstorming as possible, because it means everyone's contributing to the answer, which ultimately means they'll be more on board with the final answer. Okay, I know objectives is a crappy word, so pick a different one. Anyway, so but then what's stopping us from doing that? By the way, this is not revelation, right? Duh, like you have goals and then what's that? This is not like, but going through this, I'm telling you, is great. So again, there could be anything. Yeah, we'd love to do that, except our churn rate is 5% per month. People are just fleeing. And not only is that bad from a financial point of view, it means the customers don't want our crap. That's probably more important than opening up a new geography, that they don't want it. Oops, we gotta fix that. So, okay, so there's could be all kinds of things. We lost a key person, and so some team is screwed. They need to go work on that first. Okay, so it could be all kinds of things. Once again, what are they? Let's find the top couple of things that are holding us back the most from doing the first things. This is, okay, then finally, of course, what are we going to do? And this takes creativity. There's no magic answer to this. But at least we know what we're trying to get to here. And for the obstacles, we're either trying to attack it, or we're trying to avoid, or we're having to solve the first thing by avoiding it. For example, let's say one of the obstacles is we don't have enough money. Well, attacking it would be like, so we're going to raise money, so we're going to get debt from, I don't know, Nathan. So we're going to do customer-based financing by charging an annual fee and getting people to switch to annual, and the customers will fund us. There are lots of ways that you could solve that obstacle of not enough money, or you could work around it. You could say, okay, look, it's a constraint. We don't have that much money. So we're going to have to get creative about how we make some progress, maybe not all the progress we want, but some on those top ones without money. That just becomes an enabling constraint. That's another way to do it. So anyway, as simplistic as this might sound, it's a very easy narrative. Remember, everyone, because of our strategy, we want to do this, but this is happening. And so here's what we're going to do. Like, it's such a simple story. And so if you do this every quarter and it takes no longer than a page to say it, everyone knows at a high level exactly what to do. So again, I do this on the team level, and you can even do this on a larger level at the, and then I think doing it more often than this is not necessary. It's a lot of overhead. But about every 100 days, this kind of stuff falls out of people's heads. Just like if you're a distributed team, about every 100 days, all the social fabric starts getting weaker, and you got to come together to recharge those batteries. Same kind of thing, right? This helps you identify what that is and gets everyone aligned to it. The final thing about focusing everyone is, if the whole company is working on just a few things, that means projects will cross over teams, and that's another problem, right? And you already know what this problem is. People have to talk, and that's meetings and all this crap. And then marketing says, I think we should redo the design of the product to match the website. And they're not wrong. And the engineers are like, we have to refactor the code, because that's what engineers always want to do. Did you write that code? Yeah, but we got to refactor it. Okay, whatever. They're probably right also. And then if they can't resolve it, which often is the case, it moves around. I mean, meetings and the CEO's deciding, and this is, of course, a huge not only is it inefficient, not only is this, again, diluting our power of scale, it also sucks. It's also bad for morale, and I mean, who wants to live like this? So there's two kind of main ways to deal with this. One is called matrixed, which means somebody runs the project and tells everyone across the different teams what to do. What are the priorities? What are the metrics, et cetera? And critically, the direct managers or the CEO does not tell them what to do. So the good news is this is better for people's careers. Because if I'm a designer, for example, I want to sit on a team with other designers where we're working together and knocking stuff around. I want a manager that helps me become a better designer. That's what I need for my career. This preserves that. Hooray. But it's obviously complicated to have like the org chart structure, and then what does my manager do, and what does this other person? So obviously it makes this complexity. So that's a penalty. It's true. The other way is kind of making the other decision, right? Okay. This place in the org chart, that's an initiative, and everyone under there is who we need to get it done. Good, simpler, bad for the designer case. So, okay, there's no free lunch. You pick the one that matches your culture and that you think you can execute better, where you're more comfortable with whatever those downsides are. But the bottom line is the org chart somehow needs to reflect this focus so that you don't get bogged down again in crap. So that's some ideas of how to handle the many people problem. Another people problem, though, for the final thing, of course, because it's all people problems, really. I mean, there's technical problems, too. We host millions of websites and have tens of billions of events per day flying around. So we have infrastructure scale problems, too, or challenges, I should say. But it's usually people. And the big thing here I want to emphasize is that when you hire managers or even executives who are people that are building entire departments, you might say building teams, that's completely different than what you've been hiring for. And let me start with the manager. So you have, especially when you're small, you usually have like the hero developer and that person that does 100 tickets a day. But the problem is that if they leave or they have a baby or whatever, then that grinds to a halt. And of course, at scale, we can't have that. Anything that's important must be a team, so that when there's some issue there, the company proceeds, right? And that means you have to have managers. And if you think about it, this is going to be a very different skill set. But engineers in particular don't understand this. If you ask an engineer, what is a good engineering manager? The first thing they say is, they have to be great at writing code. They basically describe an architect or something, right? And they're completely wrong. Now, it's not true that a non-technical person should be an engineering manager. Of course, they need to speak the language, of course. But their job is not to be the best engineer. Hopefully you have that already. Their job is to build the team and to work on conflicts and to figure out these priorities and to work with other teams and so on. And so especially engineers, they don't interview for this ever. If you ask an engineer when they interview their manager what they ask, they never ask this stuff. It's always like coding questions, right? They don't get it. You may not get it either if you're a founder and you're not used to this and you're not used to building teams. So this is something where you have to change your mindset, so do others. The more interesting problem, though, or puzzle, is managers of managers or executives, because again, the things change a bit. And in particular, especially as a C-level person or founder, everyone you hire has to be better than you, or else the company is not progressing. And certainly, if you're scaling fast, you're going to outscale how anyone can grow. You have to get that talent. That means that person has to be better than you. But how do you do that? Like, how do I hire a pancreatic surgeon? I don't know, right? And so, interestingly, as a leader, you have this puzzle always of having to hire the pancreatic surgeon. So again, no silver bullet, but here's some tips you can use, especially in interviewing, to try to suss this out, even though you're not the expert. First of all, when you get off the call with them, you should be giddy with like, oh my God, they said they would do this and they've done that. like, even if we don't hire them, like, we've got to do some of these things, you guys. Like, I took notes like crazy. We got to do this. If that's your feeling, you literally have notes you want to go do, that's a good sign. Now, of course, since you're not a pancreatic surgeon, you don't really know if you're right about that. Maybe they weren't such good ideas. You don't know that. But the fact that you're excited and want to do it means it is a culture fit and a skill fit and a process fit for your company. That's good. That's a good step. So it's more likely to work, because as long as they're not completely dumb ideas, which they're probably not, this is more likely to work at your company, so that's actually pretty good. Another question you can ask yourself is, do I think this person's going to uplevel all of us? Like, not just the people on their team, but their peers, because they've seen this or done this or who knows why. You could even ask questions about that. So maybe they're good at metrics and no one's good at metrics, and so although they're in support, they're going to help everybody more or less. Good sign that it's going to make everyone better. Another signal of an executive as opposed to, say, a manager, where you don't expect the manager to uplevel the person next to them. An executive, that's exactly part of the job description. It's about us, the company, not just the department that you're responsible for. This is my favorite one, which is background checks. I don't mean whether they went to jail, although I guess that too. I mean calling their references. And of course, if you call their references and ask, how are they? They're going to say, they're great. So of course you don't do that. That tells you nothing. What you do is you call and say, what is the perfect scenario where this person is an absolute superstar, that they're so happy and so effective and they just get 10 times more done than you would expect? What does that, if you were to construct that for them, what would that be? Like, for example, some people say, tell me exactly what to do and I will crush it, and they will. And there's other people that are like, if you tell me what to do, I will leave. Show me where we're going, I want to figure that out, then I'm super happy. Who's right? Nobody. That's just different modes is all. So that's what you're trying to suss out. What are the modes, whether that's company culture or skill sets or what their team composition is like, or whether they have to hire a team or fix a team or build something big? You know, what is it that makes them amazing? You're asking the other person. That's actually pretty easy. It's actually easy to think of, oh yeah, yeah, if you do this, they're mad, and if you do this, they're great. Like, it's actually easy for people who know them to answer that. And then I ask the same question in the negative. Construct a scenario where you will crush their spirit. They'll be worse than neutral. They'll be destructive. You know, again, it's easy. Oh my God, yeah. If you try to tell them what to do every day, they will just quit, or they will take it out on other people. You know, oh, okay. You've never told them what your company's like. So this is a completely unbiased view of this, because we're all like this. We all have scenarios where we'd be very happy and scenarios where we would not. So we're all like this, you're just trying to find out what it is. So then, of course, you're going to take that and think about the slot in your company, the culture your company has, and the specific slot and conditions that they have that you're going to be asking them to do, and just trying to think, is that a fit? So once again, this is the way, even though you don't know anything, you don't really know anything about their specialty, you can see if they're a fit. So that's how I do it. That's actually literally what I do. The final thing I'll say about the executive level is it's nice to have somebody who's done it before. Sometimes people are like, oh, you got to stack the executive team with people who've done it before. Maybe. That could be a good idea. It could be. But there's a really big difference between zero people who have done it before and one. And so it can be any role. At WP Engine, it was actually the CEO. I became the CTO, and we hired a CEO, and it was the second best decision I've ever made. You want to guess what my first best decision ever? No, my wife. My wife was the first best decision ever. We've been married over 20 years, by the way. Anyway, my second best decision, though, was hiring Heather Bruner to be our CEO. She's been here for over 11 years now, and fantastic. But it doesn't, I mean, I've seen other companies where it was the COO or the CFO, often in some kind of operational role where this human scale is part of the challenge, and then they tackle it. That just makes sense, right? And they bring these practices, things they've seen, good and bad, to the conversation as you're solving all the conversations at the company, and that's really valuable. So again, lots of times I've seen, for example, you have your CEO founder and your product or engineering co-founder, and then maybe the CFO or COO is that person, and it's this beautiful trinity. And in fact, that's what happened at Google too, right? Like, that kind of a thing, regardless of the titles, that really is quite smart at the scaling phase. Why not import that information? So that's what we've got. It's really, really extra different after product market fit and scaling sets in. Not a little bit different. More than you think. It's a big mindset shift. you have a lot of people, you don't want to have to coordinate them very much, and you don't want to dilute them, so don't split them up too much. Decide what it is you're going to do, what's strategic, what's stopping you, so here's what we're going to do, and get everyone in the company aligned on those few things, even though you have a lot of people, so that you can crush those things, you know, because you have so many people to crush them with. And then the org chart is hard. No matter what, it's hard, but be intentional, let's say, of how that maps to the org chart. And then finally, with executives, managers are not just good ICs. They are a different thing to build people than to build products. And then with executives, you can use these little tricks, I guess, or tools, I suppose, to try to hire people better than you, because that's the only way the company is going to be good enough. And then you'll be able to scale really well. Cheers. I'm expecting to be saved by somebody, but there's no somebody. That's okay, I don't care. Yeah, let's take questions, why not?
Great talk, Jason. A few questions for you. On an annualized basis, how do you think about yourself from an evolution standpoint, right? Like, how do you measure?
So the question is, how have I changed as we've grown, personally?
Yes. Every year, how do you measure yourself from your own evolution, right?
Like, personally?
Yes.
So the question is, how do I measure myself personally as I evolve or don't as we scale? Because that's the truth. There's some ways which I have, and some ways I have not. I just know, like, well, that's a weakness, and so I should just not be in these positions, or not for long, you know? I think a 360 is again, another big business answer, but man, is it good to get anonymous feedback from people that report to you, and peers, and then have someone that knows what they're doing to process that into something where you can't tell who said what, which I guess now could be AI. I think what's good about AI and those things is it does summarize okay, but it leaves out detail that might be the whole story. Like, the details where you really understand. If you just say stuff like, you need to listen more, you're like, okay, I get. But when you hear this details, now you start to go, oh, I did that, and that did that to the other person. Oh, right? And AI tends to throw that away. So I'm not sure about AI. But 360 as a kind of a big businessy thing as that sounds, I found that to be quite illuminating. And some of that is, oh, I'm doing this wrong, okay. But actually, also, I didn't realize what I was really good at. People very consistently said, like, I get people excited about the vision of the company, and I didn't even consider that, like, at all. So I was like, oh, well, I should do that more, and I didn't even know that. So it's not just about what to fix, but about what are these strengths that you want to lean into even more. You learn that as well. I don't know what we're doing in the timeline, but I'm happy to do whatever if anyone has another question or not. I don't care. I know there's not another speaker because it's food, so it's okay if you want to leave also. I won't be offended. Yeah.
Tell us a bit more about the quarterly that you do. Is it like prose, or is it like bullet points, is it action points? Like, what's in that quarterly document?
So the question is, what's in the quarterly document? The result is, yeah, just literally a Google Doc with bullets, just text. Like, some people like to do things like link to Jira epics and stuff and like connect it all. That's cool if you're into that. But to me, that's not even important if you don't. Because, you know, it could just be that. Now, in the process of making it, the first time you do it, it's messy because you're asking these questions for the first time. A lot of people like to use Miro to like brainstorm, and everyone doing that at once. And then maybe you cluster it in certain things. What's more important than others? Or you know, there's different kind of standard ways of doing that. But subsequent times, it becomes really fast. Like we just did one with our corporate data team, and it took 2 days. I think the first time it took 3 weeks. Right? Because we're like, look, most of this is the same as last quarter, a little bit changed, a little bit of that, nothing new has cropped up here. So it's just like, tweak, 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 we're good. So it took almost no time, and yet we're 100% aligned, and so is the rest of the company about what they're doing and why. Another good reason, just to throw it out there, is when somebody is, I have the top priority thing I have to have. You're like, well, here's our priorities. Is it really? And all of a sudden, it's not, and it, you know, or if it is, again, we have a narrative to like understand that. So it can get really fast and efficient.
How did you realize that you needed a CEO? And second follow-up is, when trying to recruit or interview a CEO, what were the most important aspects to determine that you're making the right decision?
Oof, good questions. The first one is, how did I know and may come to the decision to hire a CEO? And the second one is, how do you interview for that? What are you looking for? I did a whole talk at a different conference on this topic, and I have an article, not to like push everything, but on my, I've been writing for a long time at smartbear.com. And you can read, I show you exactly what I do. But the bottom line is, a lot of these things of what makes you fulfilled, these kind of thoughts about that, they're very similar. Dan Pink with the mastery, autonomy, and purpose. There's Ikigai, right, which is like four things. I had a way that I did it. And it's that when you do stuff that you love mostly, and stuff that you're good at, and that the company needs done, then you're in a good place. Again, not revelation. But what I was able to see with this simple thing is, oh, the company needs various things at, say, 70, 80 people that we were and growing fast. We need to hire an executive team that can manage this stuff. A global sales team, for example. We're gonna be raising more money, and that's a whole thing. We're gonna have a more serious board. And we want the CEO to, we have a culture we're trying to maintain. What does that mean at scale? That's a whole nother difficult topic, right? So these are some of the things needed. And for me, it was like, these things are either things I'm not skilled at or don't like or both. So it's one thing if you aren't skilled at it, but you like it, then maybe it's a growth path. But if you don't even like it, you're just gonna hate it and not do a good job. And we just said the company needed it. So like, what's happening here? The thing that finally, so that was the intellectual part. That took like 3 months. What got me over to the line emotionally was, I was sitting in a wine bar with one of our early investors, who himself was a founder. He had taken a company public, blah, blah, blah. So he understood, right? And he goes, Jason, I know what you're thinking. Because I was like, I know we should do this, but And he goes, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, one day you're going to ring the bell on the NASDAQ, and you want the credit. And I was like, look, I know at the time there was hundreds, now there's thousands of people at the company. I know it's not just me. I know I didn't do it, but yeah, you're right. Right? It's ego. Like purely, yes, of course. Here's what he says. Here's the thing. You're the founder. You'll always get the credit. That's what I needed to hear. Of course I get to keep the ego part. I get to keep it. Wait a minute. I get to keep that part? Good. Like, what am I doing hiring a VP of sales? I don't want to do that, you know? So that, for whatever reason, that's what I needed to hear to get over the line. Of course it's true. Look, to this day, look what it says. That's not my title. My title is just like the last guy, CIO, Chief Innovation Officer. Same reason, because, you know, I do different things, which the founder's sort of allowed to. Who even cares? Did you even care? No. Look at all this credit I'm getting for this whole presentation. All right. So, that's what I needed emotionally to get over the hump. So that's, I guess, time.
Give it up for Jason at WPNJ.